This program is intended for listeners who are blind, have low vision, or have another print disability, which makes reading, holding a book, or turning a page difficult or impossible. The content is copyrighted by the respective publishers. For more information, please visit us on the web at nfradioreading.org.
Hello, this is Patricia, and for the next hour, I'll be reading from current issues of the Batavia Daily News on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service, starting with the Daily News from October 10th. Severe drought spreads throughout the GLOW region by Matt Sertle. All of the GLOW region is now in a severe drought, according to the U.S. Drought Monitor. The severe drought conditions limited to Orleans and northern Genesee County last week had spread quickly to encompass almost all of western New York as of Tuesday, according to the Drought Monitor's weekly update. The remainder in portions of Allegheny, Chautauqua, Erie, and Steuben counties remain in a moderate drought. Extreme drought expanded in portions of northern New England and far eastern New York, where short-term precipitation deficits continue to deepen, causing further losses in soil moisture and stream flow levels, the weekly summary reads. Moderate and severe drought also worsened across western and northern New York and northwest Pennsylvania amid similar conditions there. In a severe drought, crop or pasture loss is likely, according to the Drought Monitor. Water shortages are common and water restrictions are typically imposed, though none have been announced in the GLOW region. Fish kills can occur and hay prices become high. Specialty crops can be affected in yield and fruit size, while groundwater levels decline and irrigation ponds are dry. Several months of little to no rainfall have left western New York with a precipitation deficit. The area received rainfall Tuesday with about a 50% chance of showers forecast for Saturday and Sunday, according to the National Weather Service in Buffalo. But lots of rain would be needed to make up the shortage. Drought and dryness ratings are determined based on rainfall, stream levels, soil moisture levels, and similar factors. Severe drought ratings are rare in the western New York region, and the sheer scope of the land area affected hasn't occurred in at least 10 years. A statewide burn ban remains in effect due to the dry weather, while a New York State drought warning was announced Wednesday for Genesee and Orleans counties. Wyoming and Livingston counties remain under a state drought watch. Statewide drought. A total of 65.97% of New York State was experiencing some level of drought as of Tuesday, according to the Drought Monitor. Nearly all of the remainder was abnormally dry. That includes 6.77% of Essex County near Plattsburgh, which has entered extreme drought status, conditions very rare in New York State. Extreme drought conditions are characterized by widespread crop loss and financial struggles for dairy farmers, according to the Drought Monitor. Extremely reduced flow of water is observed or places dry up entirely. River temperatures are warm and wells run dry under such conditions. The town of Moriah in Essex County has issued a local state of emergency on September 16th. Due to drought conditions threatening its water supply. All non-essential water use in the town is prohibited. State officials are asking New York residents to conserve water voluntarily. Continuing with the Batavia Daily News for October 10th under the local news section. Early voting set in GLOW region. Genesee County and Orleans County have the same voting days and hours for the 2025 general election. The early voting site in Genesee County is the Genesee ARC Community Center, 38 Woodrow Road, Batavia. In Orleans County, early voting will be at the County Board of Elections, 14016 State Route 31, Albion. The early voting dates and times in both counties will be from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., October 25th to the 27th, noon to 8 p.m. October 28th to the 29th, and 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. October 30th to November 2nd. Other counties will include: in Livingston County, early voting will be at the Livingston County Government Center, 6 Court Street, room 205/208 in Geneseo. The voting dates and hours are 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. October 25th to the 27th, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. October 28th, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. October 29th, 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. October 30th, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. October 31st to November 2nd. Wyoming County early voting will be at the Board of Elections, 4 Perry Avenue in Warsaw. The dates and times will be 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. October 25th to the 26th, 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. October 27th to the 28th, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. October 29th to the 30th, 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. October 31st, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. November 1st to the 2nd. Continuing with the local news for October 10th, Oxbow planning to open a new facility in 26 by Brian Quinn. Oxbow International intends to open or to start operations at 7101 South Lake Road in Bergen early next year. Plant manager Chris Chadbourn said last week crews were painting offices and putting carpet down in the new farming equipment manufacturing facility. "We expect to start moving office people the 1st of December," Chadbourn said. "Then we'll start operations there in the early first quarter as equipment gets set up and installed in the building." The plant manager said the building, which will also serve as Oxbow's U.S. headquarters, is almost complete. "They've got a bunch of detail work. We're still working on power and then office finishes inside," he said. "We're getting close to wrapping that up. We'll start getting people moved right after Thanksgiving." Oxbow International makes products that serve the application, forage, fruit, seed, vegetable, and root crop markets. Chadbourn said the company has made about $65 million in sales annually in this country and about $400 million globally. The company was originally formed in 1969 as Byron and Enterprises, which rebuilt pallets for clients, he said. When the business began making equipment, it became Byron Equipment. "Somewhere in the 70s, we patented the corn head, and that's when everything took off," he said. "That's really where the whole thing turned into an equipment-based business at that point." Chadbourn said a corn head is an implement that goes at the front of a harvester. "That is used to literally pull the corn from the field. It's going to cut the stalk off, and it's going to separate the corn cob from the stalk so we can leave the trash out in the field," he said. When the new facility in Bergen is ready, Chadbourn said, about 150 employees will move from the Byron location at 7275 Byron Road. "We'll have future staff up into the neighborhood of 250 to 300 over the next couple years," he said. "That will be in all careers from front-end office work through HR, human resources, and accounting, through design work in the engineering department, through every facet of manufacturing, whether it's fabrication or welding, painting and assembly operations." Oxbow will plan for a spring ribbon cutting once the nice weather is back. "Once we're back to running, we'll have a nice community open house to invite the world in to see what we've got cooking," he said. Chadbourn said total investment in the project is about $50 million with new equipment coming in. "The building cost is about $35 million, about $15 million for new equipment being bought into the facility, about 100 jobs being created initially," he said. "We're bringing in brand new fabrication equipment, lasers, a whole new paint system, because we're going to have liquid paint and powder coat, as well as a bunch of upgrades to existing equipment, support equipment. Oxbow will produce all of its engine equipment in the New Bergen facility, Chadbourne said. All of the big Oxbow equipment will be produced out of the factory and shipped globally around the world, he said. We shipped to 44 different countries last year, and we expect to be shipping equipment made in this factory in Bergen to all 44 of those countries in the years to come. The company's service department will move into the Byron facility temporarily while Oxbow finishes getting out of there, Chadbourne said. That will let us wrap up that property nicely. Then we'll find a buyer for that property in the future, he said. And continuing with the Batavia Daily News for October 10th from the front page, One Dead in Pavilion Crash by Brian Quinn. The Genesee County Sheriff's Office is investigating the death of a Leicester man following a two-vehicle accident Wednesday. Howard F. Kruder, 59, of Attica, was driving a 2023 Peterbilt propane delivery truck west on Route 20. Larry D. Singer, 67, of Leicester, was driving a 2012 Chrysler south on South Street Road when he failed to yield right away to Kruder. Deputies said the delivery truck struck the Chrysler and the Chrysler struck a utility pole and stopped off the north shoulder of Route 20. The truck went off the south shoulder of Route 20 and rolled onto its side. The County Emergency Dispatch Center received the call about the accident at 1:57 p.m. Wednesday. The Genesee County Coroner's Office pronounced Singer dead at the scene. The County Sheriff's Office crash management team is investigating the accident, deputies said Wednesday. Assisting at the scene were the County Coroner's Office, New York State Police, New York State Department of Environmental Conservation Police, Leroy Police Department, Pavilion Fire Department, Leroy Fire Department, and Mercy EMS. Turning to the Batavia Daily News for October 11th. Town Planning Board okays Upstate Niagara Project by Brian Quinn. The Batavia Town Planning Board approved a site plan for a new outdoor substation and air chiller system at OATKA Milk Products, LLC, 4815 Ellicott Street Road. The board also found that the project wouldn't have a significant impact on the environment. There will be no impacts on land, board member Steve Tanner said. OATKA is owned by Upstate Niagara Cooperative Incorporated. They're not really putting anything up in the air, changing the ground elevations. The cooling towers are behind a fenced area, he said, while going through the environmental assessment form at Tuesday's meeting. Tanner said the project would have an impact on energy. They're using a substantial amount of energy that requires an upgrade to a substation based on what they're telling us. In doing that, they're mitigating the impact on energy, he said. The impact being it requires upgrades to a substation, and they're going to make sure those upgrades are taken care of. After the meeting, Planning Board Chairman John Long said the substation and air chiller system are for Upstate Niagara's facility on Ellicott Street Road. It's not a huge project. It's really just a couple of concrete pads and a fence, and they have the chiller system mounted on those pads, Long said afterward. Town engineer Steve Mountain said the project is not very big. They're just installing some pieces of equipment, essentially, Mountain said. The main thing is they're building something, albeit small, over the top of a wellhead protection area. They just have to make sure that there is no possibilities of any kind of a spill or anything. Mountain said a wellhead protection area is an area surrounding the city of Batavia's well field. Essentially, the cone of influence for something that goes into the surface could get into the well system. We want to make sure that's protected, he said. We have a code written around the protection measure that they, Upstate Niagara, have to follow. You're listening to a reading of articles and features from the Batavia Daily News on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Continuing with the Batavia Daily News for October 11th, under local news, Byron discusses proposed rental law by Brian Quinn. Those who want to rent their properties to the public, such as for an Airbnb, will have some regulations to abide by if the town board approves a proposed local law. The board held one public hearing on this issue Wednesday during its regular meeting. The town of Byron finds that the use of private property for short-term rentals can negatively impact the aesthetic character, property values, peace and enjoyment, and public safety of the community, board members said in a resolution at Wednesday's meeting. It is deemed necessary and appropriate to establish reasonable regulations concerning short-term rentals to promote the general welfare, health, safety, and prosperity of the inhabitants of the town of Byron. The proposed law defines rental property as any portion of real property rented or used for compensation in exchange for lodging for a period of not more than 31 consecutive days. This may include campgrounds, tent sites, or tent platforms, and other temporary structures on the parcel. A man in the front row of the audience, who did not state his name after Hensel asked the speakers to do so, said the town doesn't need a local law on short-term rentals. Who's complaining about Airbnbs? Who's complaining about short-term rentals? Why does anybody care? He asked. Board member Martin Dilcher said he was concerned about this. My house in particular, where I live, I have people on either side of me, Dilcher said. Dilcher, who owns a construction company, said he wouldn't want a crew like his company is coming next door to the house, his house. Construction workers come in and out of there. They're a different bunch when you're on your own, he said. I'm not saying that you can't have it. My whole theory is, if you want it at your house, you have to go through the rules and regulations and get a permit. As long as your residents next to you agree that you can have it, I think that's when you have it. I just don't want random people coming in next door to my house, spending the night hooting and hollering, doing whatever they do. The man said he hasn't heard of one person having that problem with an Airbnb. Jeremy Fuller asked whether the town would limit Airbnbs to in-town Airbnbs only. If you're the only person on your road, are you exempt from the local law? He asked. His closest neighbor is his brother, a half mile down the road, Fuller said of the first man who spoke. Why does he have to say anything to his neighbor a half mile down the road? Dilcher said the town has to make some rules and regulations. Among the proposed requirements is that an owner must get a revocable short-term rental permit. A short-term rental permit shall be valid for 1 year and must be renewed 30 days prior to expiration of current permit if the premises is to continue to operate as a short-term rental. The short-term rental permit is not transferable to a new owner, the resolution stated. Board member Alfred Kleisick said he was reading through the proposed law and that under short-term rental standards, there are a lot of points that Kleisick wouldn't have thought of that are important. Not just to the people who are renting, but to the renters, the property owners themselves, he said. If I come up to you, I want to do a short-term rental at your house, I'm going to assume you have smoke detectors. I'm going to assume you have CO2 detectors. I'm going to assume it's a safe property. Within the proposed local law, Kleisick said, there are specific criteria a resident must meet. In part, the law says each sleeping room in a property must have one smoke detector. There must be one additional smoke detector on each floor. Carbon monoxide detectors shall be installed as required by the New York State Uniform Fire Prevention and Building Code. Continuing with the Batavia Daily News for October 11th, Ghostly Encounters Haunted Horseshoe Lake by Ryan Duffy. There are many haunted tales throughout the history of Genesee County, but there always seem to be more that become known. Now that October is here in full force, we can reflect on one that turned out to be less than genuine, a ghost story that seemed to die out after a few decades, but still made its mark during the 1920s and 30s. The site in question is Horseshoe Lake. The stories come about, at least in a published sense, during the 1920s, just as Horseshoe Lake was becoming a hotspot for summer fun in Genesee County. In July 1923, many claims came to light of visitors to the lake seeing mysterious shapes and lights out on the water. The sightings became more frequent during the 4th of July weekend that year and shortly after. Many people spotted what Daily News article on July 9th stated, a luminous, tenuous shape posing weirdly over the water. A lightless glow that hovered over the land, mysteriously disappearing at the approach of a human being. There were many speculations about what was witnessed or where it came from, but it caught the attention of many. Many boaters and other visitors reported seeing either small glowing lights or apparitions on the lake or around the shore, but always around the same time near midnight. The first instance referenced was by two boating parties who had pulled into a small cove east of the resort's bathing beach. There was a moderate wind blowing through, pushing the water ever so slightly, and the lights of the dance hall had just gone out as the party that night ended. The lake had become very quiet, as even the moon and stars were covered by a thick blanket of clouds over much of the sky. In this stillness, the boaters saw a strange small light, or possible ghost, floating a dozen feet or so above the still waters. It frightened the boaters so much, combined with the unnerving atmosphere, that they pulled their boats out of the water and headed for the shore and the lighted pavilion to share their story with the resort's staff. Another night, a few days later, a few local boys were fishing at the lake when they too saw a strange ghost-like form on the water near Lone Pine Point on the western shore. The boys fled in fear, giving up the chance at any more bites. Other reports included seeing a white mist in the shape of a human floating in the air a dozen feet above the water. They also noted bright lights being seen in the woods that stood behind the swimming beach. When witnesses moved closer to the area where the lights were seen, they seemed to fade and disappear without explanation. Several of these stories seem to have had a logical reason behind them. According to the then manager of the lake, John C. Pratt, the boys fishing actually saw a man in a boat fishing. He was wearing a white, and the boys spotted him when his companion shone a flashlight on him. The lights that were seen in the woods were also explained away by many as the northern lights. Even the lights on the water gained a source by the 1950s. According to Mr. Clark, the ghost was an attempt to prevent dancers at the hall from leaving their boats in the water. The ghost stories appeared to have gone as quickly as they came, as even only a few years later there were no mention of the specters hovering over the water of Horseshoe Lake. It seemed as the resort grew, the ghost stories became bad for business and did keep some visitors away. Turning to the Batavia Daily News for October 14th, City Council, 3 seats vacant, 4 interested, by Brian Quinn. 4 candidates want voters to send them back to City Council or send them to Council for the first time. However, there are only 3 at-large seats up for election this November. During early voting, October 25th to November 2nd, and on Election Day, November 4th from 6 a.m. to 9 p.m., city voters' ballots choices are incumbents Eugene Janowski Jr. and Richard Richmond II, both Republican, and Conservative Party candidates, and challengers Nicholas Lord, Republican and Conservative candidate, and Samuel DeSalvo, Democratic and future of Batavia candidate. Eugene Janowski Jr. Janowski said he is reaching the end of his third four-year term on the city council. He has been council president for almost 10 of those 12 years. It feels like his first three terms have flown by, he said last week. The priorities on the horizon are downtown revitalization 2.0, which will involve the Ellicott Street corridor, to make that along the same lines of Main Street, to improve it and create a positive business environment in that area, he said. We're preparing our presentation to apply for another round of downtown revitalization funding, he said. The Brownfield Opportunity Area, BOA, committee is identifying brownfield projects that qualify for improvements. The projects we're looking at are all in the Ellicott Street corridor, the ice rink, Austin Park area, he said. With about 3 weeks before the general election, Joukowsky said he has visited a lot of houses. We visited over 400 houses at this point, he said last week. Their priorities are street improvements, sidewalk improvements, infrastructure improvements, tree limbs, and various things that are in the way or blocking. Over the years, the trees have been removed for various construction projects, and they haven't been replaced. Graffiti is another problem, Jankowski said. We have been noticing various spouts of graffiti on various buildings and signage and crosswalk signage and things like that, he said. We want to set up some type of process where we can identify them and address them sooner. Candidate Richard Richman II. Richard Richman was appointed early in 2022 and then ran for election in November 2022. To fill out the term of former Councilman-at-Large Jeremy Karras after Karras stepped down. As far as accomplishments, Richmond noted that in 2025, the City Council reduced the average tax rate by 50 cents from $8.96 per $1,000 of assessed property value to $8.46 per $1,000. We've been investing in youth sports. We've got the chiller up at the ice arena. We've got somebody running that. It's a multi-purpose event, Richmond said. The councilman at large pointed to the $10 million Downtown Revitalization Initiative, DRI, grant the city was awarded in 2017 and the $50 million in private investment in downtown. Richmond also mentioned the revitalization of Jackson Square. You can see people there. They're enjoying themselves. We've got the merchants behind us for that, he said. For me and for Gino Jankowski, we have things we can talk about, not things that we didn't do, not promises, but things that we did. From 2018 to 2024, Richmond noted $254,581,000 in public and private money was invested in the city. There were DRI projects such as the Healthy Living Campus on Main Street and Dr. Coomer Nepali's dental practice with housing units upstairs at 99 Main Street. We've gotten grants to get things done, he said. The city has worked on or continues to work on strategic plan items such as updating city center, revitalization strategy for Ellicott Street, water meter upgrades, wastewater treatment plant improvements, and the new $15 million city police station. Candidate Nicholas Lord. Lord is running for office for the first time. The Batavia native graduated from Batavia High School in 2014. He then moved away, living in the Buffalo area for about a decade and returned to Batavia about 2 years ago. Lord works for Catholic Health. He is the Director of Facilities and Engineering for Mount St. Mary's Hospital in Lewiston and Lockport Memorial Hospital. Lord said most of the streets in the city are good streets and that people take care of their homes. If you drive quickly, you'll see one or two houses that ruin a street due to the condition of the houses. Hearing the concerns of my neighbors and my personal concerns about certain houses and seeing my grandma go through it for all those years, we were walking one day with my wife, and I said, I think I'm going to throw my hat in the ring, he said. I had read some article that said they were looking for candidates for city council. I said, someone should be doing something about that. The 29-year-old said he wants to make sure things continue in the right direction in the city for the benefit of young people moving back to Batavia with families. Increased code enforcement is something Batavia has been working on, he said. I want to see that go in the right direction, make sure we stay true to that, which I believe they certainly will, he said. One of the other things that I want to do is open the city up a little more so the taxpayers can see where their money is going. Candidate Samuel DeSalvo. DeSalvo is running for city council for the third time, having run in 2019 in the 5th Ward and in 2020 in a special election as an at-large candidate. There isn't really an independent voice on the city council right now, according to DeSalvo. There's not really an independent voice on there that's willing to speak up and able to speak up that isn't reliant on the powers that be on council and in the city, he said. I was not very comfortable being in a city where everyone in leadership thought exactly the same. I wanted to be a voice that made a difference and was willing to step up and speak out against stuff. The Democratic and future Batavia candidate said, I just think that on a board of people who are making decisions for 15,000 people, there should be differences of thought and opinion on that board. Right now, there isn't. The last person who thought differently than the rest of the council was Rose Mary Christian, who retired from the council in 2021. Many people aren't aware that council members are about the same, DeSalvo said. When I tell them that, people are very surprised, he said. What the city council is doing is very business-focused and very focused on downtown development. There just really seems to be a community focus and a lack of involvement from citizens, which is who we're doing a lot of this stuff for, he said. I talk to a lot of people who say, what is there to do for my kids and for my grandkids here? You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Batavia Daily News on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Continuing with the Batavia Daily News for October 14th. Habitat for Humanity breaks ground on 25th home by Alyssa Hill. Livingston County Habitat for Humanity held a groundbreaking ceremony September 29th for its 25th home, a project that coincides with the nonprofit's 25th anniversary. The house is being built on land in Pifford, donated to the organization several years ago. It will be a modular build for a single mother of three and is expected to be completed in early 2026. This is iconic for us, our 25th build in our 25th year, said Tamatha Waldron, Executive Director of Livingston County Habitat for Humanity. It's always exciting to see a new family in need to be able to move in, and we're excited to start this project for a well-deserving family. Since 1998, Livingston County Habitat has partnered with more than two dozen families across communities, including Livonia, Avon, Lima, Dansville, Groveland, and Caledonia. Waldron said each build is a visible reminder of the group's mission to provide not a handout, but a hand up. Habitat partners with families to create affordable housing through a mix of volunteer labor and sweat equity hours from participants. Applicants must contribute 200 to 300 hours of labor, depending on household size, and complete home ownership courses. Homeowners then purchase their homes with affordable mortgages. That model, Waldron said, is designed to give families long-term stability. There's a common misunderstanding that these homes are just given to the family in need, she said. The family selected needs skin in the game, and they need to be able to finance the home to purchase it from us. For the chosen family, Waldron said, the project represents a major step towards stability. It's exciting that this is an opportunity that we are able to partner with this family and get them into a healthy, stable, secure home. She said it's beyond rewarding to see. Waldron noted the anniversary project also highlights the organization's staying power. We're going strong, she said. We have a solid board, a good team of volunteers, and a family selection committee that are committed to keeping Livingston County habitat growing. Turning to the Batavia Daily News for October 15th. Under the local news, Downtown Trick-or-Treat is Saturday, Batavia. Downtown Trick-or-Treat returns in a few days with the annual event for kids and families set for 2 to 4 p.m. Saturday. The free, family-friendly Halloween event invites people to dress up in costumes and celebrate Halloween in a safe way. Participating downtown businesses will open their doors to hand out candy and welcome trick-or-treaters. Maps will be available to show families all the stops and make sure no one misses out on the fun. BID Executive Director Shannon Maudy said, "Costumes are encouraged for both kids and adults, adding to the Halloween spirit. Downtown trick-or-treating is more than just collecting candy. It's about community and encouraging everyone to support their local businesses." For more information, visit BID's Facebook page at Downtown Batavia Business Improvement District or the website bataviabid.com. Maps will be posted on both of the week of the event. Gateway Home plans Caregivers Series. Gateway Home Attica has partnered with A Storied Life to launch an innovative workshop series for caregivers of older adults. The Befriending Death Workshop Series for Caregivers will be conducted October to December at Stevens Memorial Community Library in Attica. It is designed for staff and volunteers of Gateway Home. The series will then be conducted again in spring for community caregivers in Wyoming, Genesee, and Erie counties. Each of the six sessions begins with a story circle, an intimate small group experience where 6 to 8 participants share sacred stories about birth, death, and life's pivotal moments through deep listening and authentic storytelling. There's something profound that happens when we gather in person to share our stories and witness each other's experiences, says founding director Amber Sastry of A Storied Life in a news relief. In our story circles, caregivers discover they are not alone in their struggles, fears, or questions. This sacred space of deep listening creates genuine community and helps people find meaning even in the most difficult moments. Following each story circle, participants will enjoy a social tea break before reconvening for educational workshops covering essential caregiving topics. Topics will include understanding the journey, what matters most, getting real about caregiving and loss, pre-planning that's doable, honoring your loved one, potluck party, and practical planning. To inquire about the spring community program, contact Sarah Bruner at 585-708-4331 or Sarah, S-A-R-A, at gatewayhomeattica.com. The series is made possible through grant funding from the Ralph C. Wilson Jr. Legacy Funds, administered by the Community Foundation for Greater Buffalo. Continuing with the Batavia Daily News for October 15th, upcoming YWCA events will note Domestic Violence Awareness Month. As the sole provider of domestic violence services in Genesee County, the YWCA is continually striving to raise awareness of the nature and prevalence of intimate partner and family violence within our community. October brings an additional opportunity for advocates to unite through observing Domestic Violence Awareness Month, DVAM. Community events throughout the month allow agencies to share information about signs and types of abuse, to distribute information about available services, and to raise up survivors' stories while also providing insight for policymakers on the continuous need for funding and resources. In honor of DVAM, the YWCA is proud to be hosting a community breakfast and domestic violence services panel with discussion on Monday, October 27th from 8 to 10:30 a.m. at Main Street 56 Theater. This event is free to all, but does require pre-registration. In addition to this event, we will be making our educators available to local school districts to speak on healthy relationships and to local agencies to speak about awareness and resources for the people they serve. 1,579 purple ribbons will grace the trees around Upton Monument as a visual representation of the services that the YWCA provided last year. Well, the old courthouse will be lit with purple to show support for survivors. Please join us for the breakfast on October 27th and consider wearing purple on Thursday, October 16th, Purple Thursday, to express your support. As always, our advocates can be reached weekdays at 585-343-5808 or 24-hour hotline 585-343-7513. Continuing with the October 15th Batavia Daily News. Advocates blast ICE for Batavia book ban. As volunteer book coordinator for Justice for Migrant Families, Western New York, Abigail Cook coordinates with a rotation of volunteers to send 10 to 20 books per month to people held in the Buffalo Federal Detention Facility in Batavia. The texts requested touch a wide range of literature, religious and self-help books, science fiction and romance novels, guides to learning languages, and Sudoku puzzle books. The requests are sometimes for English translations, but also commonly Spanish and a host of other languages. Beginning in late July, however, Cook learned from her volunteers that their orders, completed online through Barnes & Noble, packaged and delivered from a warehouse directly to the detention center, were being returned to the warehouse and not reaching their destination. She decided in September to personally submit an order for 10 books to be sent to the detention facility to see if there was an error in the process. She received refunds for all 10. They've just been refusing them outright and sending them back, Cook said Thursday, later adding, "It's cruel, and it just feels to me like a sort of arbitrary exercise in power." Justice for Migrant Families, the New York Civil Liberties Union, and a slew of other activists and advocacy organizations on Wednesday sent letters to the regional U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement Field Office to allege that ICE officials for months have violated detainees' First Amendment rights by refusing to accept personal packages of books delivered to the Batavia Detention Center. "Having access to a book is a lifeline for a lot of people," said Megan Porter, staff attorney for the NYCLU. "It's not just having something to do to spend the time, but to also participate in what seems like a small act but connects people to feeling more human." Detainees at the Buffalo Federal Detention Center are typically migrants in pretrial detention as they await developments in their immigration proceedings, Porter said. An ICE official, when asked to address the book banning, pointed to a new safety policy as the driving force. The Buffalo Federal Detention Facility recently reviewed its mail handling procedures and in July 2025 discontinued the practice of accepting personal book shipments for detainees. During that review, officials identified security risks associated with the direct mail program, said the spokesperson, who requested not to be identified in an emailed statement. Although ICE's performance-based national detention standards do not require facilities to accept books mailed to individuals, Batavia had voluntarily provided that option for several years. The ICE spokesperson would not identify the risks associated with accepting books for detainees. "We don't discuss topics of operational security," the official said. ICE's explanation of safety risks has not satisfied any of the senders. Just the idea that there could be some kind of conspiracy to get contraband in through this process, I honestly cannot imagine how that would actually happen, Cook said. She emphasized that her volunteers never even come into contact with the books. The Batavia Detention Center has several in-house resources for literature, the ICE spokesman said. Detainees may access law and recreational libraries and request religious texts from the center's chaplain and read e-books on tablets. The ICE spokesperson said the new policy regarding mail handling procedures is specific to Buffalo and not indicative of ICE's national policy. The regional section of ICE's official website does not reflect the Batavia Center's new direct mail policy, although the webpage notes that due to the lapse in federal funding, this website will not be actively managed. Porter, the NYCLU attorney, said detainees in Batavia struggle with other factors, including a lack of access to translators and severe overcrowding. Media outlet The Investigative Post last week reported that an average of 727 migrants occupy a facility that holds 600 beds, and Republican leaders since last winter have urged the development of a larger facility to house the targets of the federal government's immigration crackdown. The NYCLU official believes that barring detainees from receiving books from outside sources is strategic. It's part of a broader culture of trying to isolate people on the inside from folks who can be their advocates on the outside, Porter said. ICE makes it so that they can disappear, so they're out of sight and out of mind of the general public. You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Batavia Daily News on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Turning to the Batavia Daily News for October 15th. Oh, correction, October 16th. Genesee County urges water conservation. Genesee County officials are urging people to conserve water amid the region's ongoing severe drought. Area water sources are experiencing significantly reduced levels, officials said in a statement issued Wednesday. That's placing additional strain on the county's water system as more water is drawn from surface sources such as Tonawanda Creek. Residents may notice temporary changes in taste or odor, officials said. Those differences are caused by naturally occurring compounds which develop under seasonal drought conditions and are harmless. To help protect our shared water supply, residents are encouraged to limit non-essential water use whenever possible, officials said in the advisory. Small steps taken by everyone can make a meaningful difference in maintaining water reliability during this dry period. Most of Western New York, including the entire GLOW region, entered a severe drought as of October 7th, according to the U.S. Drought Monitor. A New York State drought warning was then issued the next day for Genesee and Orleans counties. A warning is the second of four levels of state drought advisories. Voluntary water conservation intensifies while public water supplies and industries are advised to update and implement local drought contingency plans. Wyoming and Livingston counties remain in a New York State drought watch, which is issued when a drought is developing. State officials are asking all New York residents to conserve voluntarily. In a severe drought, crop or pasture loss is likely, according to the Drought Monitor. Water shortages are common and water restrictions are typically imposed. Fish kills can occur and hay prices become high. Specialty crops can be affected in yield and fruit size, while groundwater levels decline and irrigation ponds are dry. A statewide burn ban also remains in effect due to dry conditions. The GLOW region was at moderate risk of outdoor fires as of Wednesday, according to the State Department of Environmental Conservation. Continuing with the October 16th Batavia Daily News, New Police Station Nearly Complete in Batavia by Brian Quinn. Construction of the new $15 million police station at Alva Place and Bank Street is about 95% complete. You're going to see signage go up next week on the outside of the building, Police Chief Sean Hubisch said during Tuesday's City Council meeting. We're moving right along. We'll run into a couple hiccups here and there, but nothing major. Ground was broken in May 2024 on the facility, which will provide a dramatic modernization compared to this department's existing facility. The new location will also have 115 parking spaces in the lot in the corner of Bank Street and Alva Place, and the on-street parking nearby will be Americans with Disabilities Act compliant. Council member David Twitchell asked about the status of outside downlighting at the building. They did have some issues with some of that product, Hubisch said. I believe that 60 fixtures altogether up in there and 20% of them weren't working. They are working with the manufacturer of that to get those warrantied and get them back up. That'll be a nice feature. We'll be able to change that lighting for the time of year or special events. Council member at large Bob Bilikowski said if crews are restoring parking spaces at the site, as soon as they take the construction fence down and they finish the parking lot, that will get restored. I believe that striping is part of the site contractor's responsibility, Hubisch said. He's going to get his binder down, get the top down, and get the striping done outside of our secure wall. Hubisch said the secure wall itself was completed Tuesday. Here is some wrought iron fencing that will go across the top of that still. Paving should take place, I believe, late this week or early next week, weather dependent. The city's aging and obsolete facility nearby on 10 West Main Street has become increasingly outdated over the decades. Continuing with the October 16th Batavia Daily News. Inaugural Mount Morris Craft Show, a success, by Sol Hauser. Starting a new craft show can be a risky proposition. Crowds may not show, vendors may not be interested. The whole event could be washed out by rain. But the risks paid off for the Mount Morris Kiwanis Club, which hosted the first Genesee Valley Vendors and Craft event last weekend in Bellamy Park. The show was a success. Organizers and vendors alike told the LCN, drawing 65 vendors and a substantial number of craft shoppers. Bill Wesolkowski, the owner of Billamy's Woodworking in Blaisdell, Erie County, spent the summer displaying his wares at shows all over western New York, as far south as Panama in Chautauqua County, and as far north as Albion and Niagara Falls. He said he was impressed by the turnout and organization of the Mount Morris show. Other vendors echoed his sentiments. I was pleasantly surprised, said Corey Spadone, owner of a booth selling Grinch-themed memorabilia and potpourri. They did a nice job. For longtime shoppers of the Letchworth Arts and Crafts Show, which ended its nearly 50-year run in 2023, the new show marked the return of a beloved fall tradition. It's really nice, said shopper Gail Router of Mount Morris. I used to love to go to the one in the park, and I'm sad that they don't do it anymore, but this is even closer and easier. Event organizer Gertrude Hoffman of the Mount Morris Kiwanis Club said she heard positive feedback from every vendor at the show. Because we got the word out, we had vendors from Canada, from Niagara Falls, from Syracuse, Rochester. We had them from all over, she said in a telephone interview. We just advertised the crap out of it, and we had people coming from all over, and it turned out beautiful, absolutely beautiful. It was hectic at first trying to get people set up, but once everything got set up, it was easy peasy. Hoffman said the event also brought new visitors to Mount Morris's Main Street stores and helped Kiwanis volunteers learn the ropes, with the expectation of a larger event in 2026. We're going to promote to more people next year. This year we went to 65 vendors because we weren't sure, she said. We want to get to over 100 for next year. And a couple items from the police blotter from the October 16th Batavia Daily News. Pavilion. A Pavilion woman faces felony charges after she allegedly injured a deputy attempting to arrest her on a warrant, Genesee County Sheriff's deputies said. Megan T. Forder, 28, of Junction Road, had been wanted for stalking another person while in possession of a knife. She was charged with second-degree assault on a police officer, second-degree menacing, resisting arrest, and stalking while in possession of a weapon. Batavia. An inmate at Genesee County Jail who was ordered locked in his cell because of an outburst was charged with a felony after he smashed his cell window, Genesee County Sheriff's deputy said. Jared K. Fothiasis, 30, was charged with third-degree criminal mischief. He was arraigned and returned to jail. Alexander. James G. Wright, 33, of Darien, was charged with DWI after he crashed on Bowen Road Sunday, Genesee County Sheriff's deputy said. He's also charged with failure to keep right, speed, not reasonable, and moving from a lane unsafely. He was not injured in the crash. From Holly, William J. Cornelius, 59, of Medina, was charged after an investigation into a menacing complaint in September, state police said. He was charged with stalking, menacing, and criminal tampering. And from Albion, Corey Strickland, 53, of Albion, was charged with petite larceny, state police said. She is scheduled at a later date in town court. You've been listening to a reading of articles from the current issues of the Batavia Daily News. We read the Batavia Daily News every Saturday at 9 a.m. Your reader has been Patricia. Thank you for listening.
Coming up next in the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service, we have the East Aurora Advertiser. At 11 o'clock, we have the Niagara Gazette. And at noon, we have the Dunkirk Observer. Stay with us for these readings and more throughout the day. Radio Reading mails out a large print program schedule to our listeners every other month. If you have not received a Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service large print program schedule in the mail, please call us at 716-821-5555. We will make sure that you receive one every other month. A Braille version of the schedule is also available upon request. Our number again is 716-821-5555. The following program is intended for listeners who are blind, have low vision,